A Bluemuda. A Bluemuda. Your field's on fire, Bluemuda. Turf that looks like heaven. It plays real fine. That field can take a beating and continue to shine. Seed and some fertilizer, it'll be fine. Then you know that your field is dry. Bluemuda, Bluemuda, your field's on fire. It's popping, it's popping, mo mo. The seed is up. It's popping, mo mo. As the kids say, it will slay.
Welcome to Around the Turf Scene, your periodical podcast about turf grass management. I'm Rusty Stacklewitz, your host. Today, we're going to talk with Dr. Greg Munshaw from Mountain View Seeds and Brian Winka from Advanced Turf Solutions about Bluemuda. Let's get at it. Today with us, we have Dr. Greg Munshaw from Mountain View Seeds and Brian Winka from Advanced Turf Solutions. I'd like to ask Dr. Munshaw to introduce himself first, and then we'll move on to Brian Winka.
I'm Dr. Greg Munshaw, Director of Agronomy for Pradham Seed Companies, and have been with the company for about a year now. And we proudly sell Mountain View to Advance and Advanced Turf, and have been working with Brian for 6 years, something like that, on Bluemuda. And we have created an interesting relationship with each other over the last 6 years, and actually enjoy each other's company and talking Bluemuda. So we're excited about this today.
Quickly, I'm going to interrupt you and start before I even go to Brian. But before you worked for Mountain View, what was kind of your past?
So I did 16 years as a university professor at Mississippi State and University of Kentucky, and was an extension at UK, and so did a lot of presentations and working with homeowners and sports turf managers to try and just help them with grass issues, whatever. My focus has always been try to help the little guy that doesn't have the money or knowledge necessarily to do a great job and to help them do a great job.
Excellent. Now you had a match up to that, Brian.
Well, that's where I come in, the guy that didn't have any knowledge. So I do Brian Winka, obviously work with Advanced Turf. Before coming here, I was a sports turf manager for a dozen years or so. And like Greg said, we've been working with each other on this concept for quite a while. We actually were introduced to each other at an STMA event. I kind of ran my ideas by him, and I think his comment was, "That sounds stupid, but I got family in the area, so I'll come by and take a look at it just to humor you," type scenario. So, and here we are, you know, 6-7 years later, still working on this stuff.
So we've said the word Bluemuda several times now. When do you want to describe what exactly we're talking about today?
So Bluemuda, it's a growing concept. So it's not a certain seed variety or anything like that. It's a growing concept of mixing warm and cool season grasses together year round, specifically bluegrass and Bermuda. Originally started on athletic fields. I've seen it on golf courses now. So it's a growing, trend, I guess, in the transition zone at this point.
A lot of homeowners are interested in it as well.
Yep.
But it is, I agree with you completely, Brian. It's growing. It's something that is more and more people are using it, but it's a fluid kind of a dynamic as well, where you know, the grasses are changing, the management practices are changing as we learn more about it as we go. And a lot of the times that's the practitioners learning through trial and error of how do you do this? And figuring things out the hard way a lot of times. And that's how Brian started. This was trying to figure these things out as he went along. But, you know, we've added some information as we've gone along, but it's, you know, basic recipe is starting out with Bermuda grass typically, and then seeding Kentucky bluegrass into the Bermuda grass to have a poly stand of the two species growing together year round. And that's what Blue Muda is, a two species system with perennial coverage, something that we're not spraying out every spring.
And really what's the key to this is the newer varieties, which aren't as new now, but the newer genetics that came out, you know, 10, 12 years ago on some of these bluegrasses, I think that was the key to this system to really allowing it to work, where we've got the heat tolerant, the traffic tolerant, the more aggressive bluegrasses. Greg obviously has done a ton of research and with multiple varieties of bluegrasses, and some work really well and some just don't work at all. So the key is the newer genetics of bluegrasses that are out there.
Newer, you're right, Brian, newer genetics, but also there's got to be specifics in there as well, because we find that a lot of midnight types don't typically work. They fight with the Bermuda grass. We need a grass that's going to play nicely with the Bermuda grass and not be too aggressive to let the Bermuda grass kind of take back over in the summertime. And some of the bluegrasses just don't do that and become almost clumpy like a ryegrass might if you don't spray it out. And so the bluegrass is really important. And like you said, some of them work really well. We talk a lot about two specific ones, but there's probably 10 or 15 that would do really well for this, but there's probably just as many or way more that wouldn't work in this situation. And so the bluegrass is really important, choosing the right one, more so I'd say than the Bermuda grass.
Yes, I would agree. And then kind of hitting on the Bermudas, though, if you look at some of the older varieties, like a quick stand that have more of an open canopy versus the newer, you know, whether it's Northbridge or Tahoma, that the canopy is a little bit tighter. The issues that you can run into there is just getting that bluegrass seed through that mat layer to get good germination. But as long as you're using good equipment and can get it down in there, there's not an issue of using those newer varieties. It's just the older ones with the more open canopy can be a little bit easier to get that established.
Yeah.
So what is your recommendation for seeding? What's your recommendation for seeding on that aspect of getting it in there? This is a slit seed application, a broadcast application, both. What are we looking at?
I typically will recommend slit seeding, so we know that we're getting good seed soil contact, somewhere about that 3 pounds per thousand rate. Had success with people and personal experience going out in the spring, you know, late mid-May, early June, did some phrase mowing on Bermuda fields and then came back and seeded right into it there. So it really is getting that bluegrass seed into the soil.
Yeah, we had some success with vertical
mowing. Then you hit on that. So.
Sorry, Rusty.
Oh, that's fine.
So yeah,
a little delay. So
okay,
catching up with each other.
We did some vertical mowing as well. I agree with Brian that a slit seeder that'll open up the canopy a little bit as it drops in the seed will do a great job, even with the super dense Bermuda grasses of today. But if you don't have a slit seeder, vertical mowing, thinning out that Bermuda grass somehow is necessary to reduce the competition and create some of that loose soil to get that seed soil contact that Brian mentioned. That's critical for success in this. Bluegrass doesn't germinate all that quickly. It's not like a ryegrass. It may be 10, 14, 20 days, depending on the variety. And you don't want that Bermuda grass just plowing over the seed and burying it, because you're planting it at a time when the Bermuda grass is still thriving. And it will. It'll completely outcompete the bluegrass seedling if there's not a little bit of a buffer of space around that seedling from the Bermuda.
So let's get into that a little bit with the timing aspect. What, you know, you mentioned already, but let's go through the process mechanically. You've got Bermuda grass established. You're going to slit seed or verticut, put bluegrass in. What time of year? What should your expectations be? Those sorts of things.
And Brian, do you want to talk at all about the about going the other way, bluegrass to Bermuda?
Yeah, we can. I mean, essentially, you can reverse the process if you've got a full bluegrass field and you want to use one of the seeded varieties of Bermuda grass. Same type scenario. Just you know, mid May, June, when it's time to plant Bermuda seed, go out there. Slit seeder is going to be obviously your best way to do it, and your rate's going to be somewhere about 2 pounds per thousand on that Bermuda. It works doing it that way. I still prefer having a Bermuda base and then adding the bluegrass into it that way, but you can essentially reverse the process and it works that way also.
But Bermuda is also a really slow to germinate plant and has not great seedling vigor. And so again, thinning out that bluegrass, getting some space in there for the Bermuda grass to be able to come on is important.
Well, and I think,
do you want to talk about timing
after? Yeah, that's what, you know, I keep saying mid May to June on some of this, but I prefer if you're adding the bluegrass into Bermuda to do a fall planting. And then with the expectations, I think Greg and I both always tell people it's a process. It's not a, ryegrass overseed. So your expectation should not be that your field is going to look like you just overseed a ryegrass. It's a process. It's going to be slower. You're not going to see that full result that first fall for sure. I know both Greg and I get phone calls early March before soil temperatures have warmed up. Hey, I got this blue and it's just kind of, it's still just sitting in the rows that I planted. What's going on? I think our response for both of them is typically give it another couple of weeks and let's see what it looks like when the soil temperatures warm up. And typically then is when you really start seeing the bluegrass start to spread. So it's a long-term solution and it's a process. So it's not a quick solution, I guess, like a ryegrass would be.
Because of that though, Brian, too, there have been some turf managers that have thrown in the towel on it because it wasn't fast enough. They weren't getting that instant gratification that you do with ryegrass and said, you know what? I can't wait on something like this. I can't wait 2 years or 3 years for it to be perfect. I need it perfect this first fall. And so they tried it 1 year and threw in the towel.
Right. So, and that's why I know you say, I say, anybody that I've heard talk about it, everybody explains it. This is a process. It's not a quick fix. So you have to set that expectation with whether it's the grounds manager, your athletic director, your parks director, whoever you're reporting to, let them know the process that you're doing here and set those expectations early on.
I was going to ask about, fertility requirements. Both of those grasses have, obviously, one's cool season, one's warm season, different fertility requirements. Is cost of fertility a consideration when you're converting to this type of field because you don't have a dormant time for either one of those grasses? And kind of what does that program look like?
So what we talked about trial and error earlier, and I made a lot of mistakes early on in essentially what I found out on fertility was slower release. Essentially you're going to fertilize as if it was a cool season field. And what I see the success there in the reasoning that I kind of came up with was, you know, typically we're using some quicker release stuff on the warm season to try and get it to green up, fill in. We don't have to do that with this process because you have a full dense turf area across your field, so you can grow it slower, and by doing that we wind up making a stronger turf. And I think that's where we see a lot of the traffic tolerance and recovery is better, because we're not pushing it so fast. It's more of a slow release spoon feed type program, at least the ones that I've worked with and where we see the most success. where I've seen it fail is where managers do, especially like midsummer, if you go out there and you're throwing ammonium sulfate or something quick release, you're probably going to burn up your bluegrass.
Yeah, I agree completely. You know, we the first study that we did on Blue Muta was with Mizzou and Virginia Tech, and Brian had it going on at his facility in Chesterfield, Missouri. But we were looking at planting different rates of bluegrass into Bermuda grass and looking at different rates and products of fertilizers. And we found that Polycoat fertilizer works much better on keeping both grasses happy through the season. But since that time, seeing the spoon feeding through the summertime to give the bluegrass just a little bit of fertilizer, make sure the Bermuda grass is getting a little bit of fertilizer, seems to keep them both pretty happy through that summer. Like you said, if you go heavy with a soluble source during the summertime, you're going to burn out that bluegrass. The Bermuda is going to love it, but that bluegrass won't. And so little bits of fertilizer through the summertime, and it doesn't have to be an expensive source. You can melt down urea and spray it on in a spoon feeding amount. But yeah, using those small amounts. Another thing we found was at establishment, if you go higher than normal, so as much as 3 pounds of nitrogen going down at planting, we had better success that first fall, the grass is filling in, than if we didn't use any, or if we just use 1 pound of nitrogen per 1,000 square feet. So I think some of the fertilizer stuff is still a work in process, but I agree completely that you fertilize for the bluegrass, you go for 3 or 4 pounds per year total, and you split your applications, you do some fall apps for the, keep the bluegrass happy, but then you do some slow release in the summertime to feed both grasses.
You've got two different grasses, and obviously the new bluegrasses can tolerate a lower mowing height. Is there a consideration for that throughout the year? Are you differing mowing heights depending on what you're trying to favor, or are you maintaining a similar mowing height throughout the year?
So for me, as a manager, I mowed my fields at 3/4 of an inch, and I kept it consistent year round. I've seen guys kind of play with their heights, but I think kind of that 3/4 to 1 inch is kind of the sweet spot, depending on what kind of mowers you have. I had real mowers. So if you've got a rotary mower and you can't go that low, I don't know that I would go much higher than 1.5 inches because I'd worry about shading out the Bermuda a little bit. But I think find a height that works for you and stay there consistently throughout the season.
Yep. I know that there are some people that are going down as low as 0.04 of an inch. And to me, that's a little frightening. It's even with these new super bluegrasses. My concern is, especially at the more southern locations, that you're just going to have way too much stress on that bluegrass. And the chances of it making it through the summertime and coming back in the fall are probably not as high as if you had your height 5/8 or 3/4 or even 1 inch. And I understand in some situations like fairways, you don't want inch long fairways. People want 1/2 inch or whatever they're at for maximum roll. But, you know, if people are really going to consider this, this two grass system and really give it a good chance, I think a slightly higher mowing height because of the limitations of the bluegrass are the way to go. It doesn't mean you have to be shaggy. You can still have them tight, but I think it needs to be just slightly taller than, you know, what we might consider in the South for a regular athletic field or fairway at 1/2 inch. 5/8, 3/4, I think, is the magic number for Blue Muta.
What about growth regulators? Are you using or suggesting growth regulators, Greg? Or I know I used them in my program. Like a Primo, like 10 ounces per acre was typically where I was at every 3 to 4 weeks to help make that canopy a little tight and a little more denser. Are you seeing that? Or are you recommending that as you get around the country?
You know, I in all of my work that I did with Blue Muta, I never sprayed a single PGR. Now, that said, every turf manager that I talked to was spraying them, and looking at the success that they were having with the tightness of them, It's hard to argue against using a PGR. So I think you can do it if you want to, like, especially if you're talking lawns and things like that, you don't need to be spraying PGRs. We grew these things up as tall as 5 inches and, for horse racing and, you know, situation like that, you don't need to be messing with PGRs, but, for the professional turf managers, I think PGRs are probably the way to go.
So you mentioned at the beginning, Greg, about some people considering these two grasses together for home lawns. What would be some of the considerations for height on that end? And would you need then a real mower instead of a rotary mower? Or can you go at a higher height and use a rotary mower in this blended scenario?
So, you know, with shortcut grasses, we really need to be considering using a real mower. You're just not going to get as good of a cut quality with a rotary. But once you get up to 1.5 inches, 2.5 inches, whatever mowing height you're looking for out of a lawn, you don't need it. As long as you're keeping the blade sharp on that rotary mower, it'll do a good job of cutting the Bermuda grass. The bluegrass is pretty easy to cut, but the Bermuda grass blade is pretty pretty tough, and so it's going to beat down mower blades pretty quickly and be harder to cut. But when we mowed up or we raised our heights up to as high as 5 inches and did incremental increases, so from 3/4 of an inch, you know, 1.5 inches, 2.5 inches, up to 5, and that was all done with a rotary mower, and we had great success with mowing with the rotary, no problems whatsoever. And one of the things that we thought too when we got to that really high height was, well, the bluegrass is going to be thriving. It's not going to be under as much stress during the summertime, so it's going to stick around. The Bermuda grass may start to thin out, and if the bluegrass is extremely dense during the spring, will it shade out the Bermuda grass coming out of spring and thin it out that way as well? And we didn't see that at all. We saw a situation where, again, both of these grasses played really well together. And even at 5 inches, we had a good mix of both in the canopy during the summertime.
How far north and how far south can we implement this strategy?
I think going further south is probably more of an option than north. I think the Bermuda has its limits, obviously, as far as how far north it's going to go. The bluegrass, I just talked to a guy the other day down in Alabama at a minor league park that's putting it in. You know, it's not north or south. I guess it'd be west, but California is almost a perfect scenario out there. There's a bunch of places out there that are using it. But I do think it's really just the cold tolerance of the Bermuda is probably the biggest limiting factor on how far north you can go. Just because you got the bluegrass in there doesn't mean your Bermuda is going to make it through the winter. So really, that's the biggest limiting factor, I think.
Yeah, I had somebody ask me the other day, can I do this in New York? And, you know, there's a whole bunch of reasons to be considering doing this, right? It's so, I think to me, it's a better system than one or the other alone. But there's limitations, right? You if you get to minus 20 in the wintertime, your Bermuda grass isn't going to survive. On the flip side of that, I agree with Brian that there's more opportunity to go south because these bluegrasses are getting better and better. And there's a guy that I know that is doing, we've got it in Huntsville, Alabama right now. We've got it in Atlanta, Georgia. But there's a guy in Birmingham, Alabama, that's going to be trying it this year as well. And I'll be curious to see, you know, I'm not a betting man, but if I was, I wouldn't bet that it's going to be all that successful that far south, but you know, who knows, you know, I've been shocked by things before.
If you have a sports field with Bermuda on it, how much more usable does it become? How much more traffic can it sustain? Do we know, is there a percentage more games you can play or any data like that?
I don't know if we have any hard data on that. It does increase your playing season on your field, because if you've got, you know, a Bermuda field that, you know, it's dormant in the spring and late fall and you can still play on it. But once you wear it down, there's no recovery. You know, kind of the same with bluegrass. Midsummer, you're gonna wear it out, and it's just gonna take longer to recover. So, I know when we switched at my old facility, we went somewhere from about 800 hours a year on our soccer fields to close to 2,000 hours a year, just because the fields were in better playability. So, and that's not by any means a scientific study. That's just kind of one facility and just kind of looking at what we did. So it'd be interesting to see somebody in the academic world do a study like that.
Well, you know, it just happens to be, I was once in the academic world and did a study like that. So what we saw with traffic simulators on Bluemuda versus Bermuda alone, excuse me, was that with fall traffic, Bluemuda, and it doesn't sound all that exciting, but Bluemuda will take about 10% more traffic than Bermuda alone will. So that, you know, in the fall, not all that exciting. But the big difference there is if you wear that Bermuda grass down to absolutely nothing in the fall, so it looks horrible. If you have spring sports on that same field, you're not going to have Bermuda grass to play on. But if you have Bluemuda on that same field, that bluegrass will come screaming back in the springtime, and you'll have a full covered field versus Bermuda grass alone, where it's going to be thin and obviously still dormant. And so that was the biggest difference we saw was, yes, in the fall, the Bluemuda will take more traffic. But in the spring, where the Bermuda grass isn't going to recover until April or May, depending on where you are, the bluegrass starts to recover in February or March, depending on where you are, and you've got that full field a heck of a lot quicker than if it's just the Bermuda alone. And so that was the big benefit that we saw with recovery from traffic.
So I think even looking way back when I first started playing around with this was not only the fall traffic and when it comes out in the spring, but you know, for you grow grass in the transition zone, you've dealt with winter kill. So I had a couple fields where we had put it annual ryegrass on in the fall, transitioned out in the spring. Well, we had a really, really cold winter and I had a ton of winter kill. So basically I had to shut that field down so we could get it reestablished. Once we transitioned over to having the bluegrass in there, you've got a lot more flexibility. So even if you do experience some winter kill, you don't have to shut your field down. You could, you know, reseed into that field and still play. So I don't know that I'm not saying that Bluemuda will make it to where you never experience winter kill, but you'll still have enough dense turf on that field where you don't necessarily have to shove it down for a period of time to get it reestablished.
So for a sport like soccer that's played predominantly on the ground, you have differing densities in that situation. Does it affect playability when you do have winter kill?
I coached and played soccer at my old place, and yeah, I never noticed a difference in playability on that. You know, and again, mowing at 3/4 of an inch, we got really good ball roll, pretty true surface. So playability wise, I thought it played fantastic. That's from an amateur soccer player.
See, that's the nice thing about hockey. The ice is smooth and perfect all the time. The only thing you might lack if you do get that winter kill, you're going to have a good green stand to play on. And one thing you'll find from parents and coaches is that perception is reality. If there's some grass there, it's perfect. But if there's dead grass there and it looks horrible, then you're not a good turf manager and that field is unsafe. And so that's a big part of it right there, is just it looks presentable. And so it is presentable. But without the Bermuda grass in there, there might be slightly less footing without the living stolons to hold cleats in place. But that's really the only thing that I could see lacking if you didn't have living Bermuda grass under that bluegrass.
Are there any other considerations for putting in these fields or pitfalls to watch out for, something we haven't covered yet?
The other thing I guess that we didn't touch on it was fungicides and disease. I went my last couple of seasons where we weren't making fungicide applications anymore. And I don't have the scientific reason behind why. I've got some theories on, you know, the fertility changed up and just the two grasses helping each other out. But disease really wasn't an issue anymore on those fields for me. And I don't know if you kind of see that same thing, Greg, as far as, you know, just not seeing a lot of disease issues on that system.
Yeah, the big question that I always got was, you know, why do I want to put bluegrass in the transition zone or the upper south when it's got issues with summer patch? And so that was one of the things that I thought about the first summer. But in all the years that I grew bluegrass and Bermuda grass together, I didn't see a speck of summer patch. I didn't see a speck of disease. But even if you got something, you know, it's the chances of, I think, of it spreading through the entire field or through the entire canopy are slim, because you'd have different grasses side by side. And so it's not as easy for that pathogen to just zoom through the canopy and take everything over. You still may get some spring dead spot of the Bermuda grass from time to time, but you're not going to know it because the bluegrass is there masking it. And so summer diseases weren't an issue. And I think that's one of the benefits that we're going to see with this system, is that environmentally, we've got less nitrogen than Bermuda grass field. We've got less pesticides than a cool season field. And so, you know, those are good things to think about and to preach about moving forward, is that, hey, we've got a system here that environmentally makes a lot of sense. It's tight. It's a tight canopy. And so weed invasion is not as serious as if it was just a bluegrass alone. And so there's just a lot of reasons environmentally to think about this two grass system.
Have we investigated other two grass systems going down that same line? Can we do bluegrass into zoysia or tall fescue into Bermuda?
So I know University of Missouri was doing a study with zoysia and bluegrass. I don't know where they're at on that. I know that they're looked into that. Greg, I think you may be looking at a couple other options also.
Yeah, and I reviewed a paper a number of years ago out of China where they were looking at zoysia grass and tall fescue together. And they seem to work pretty well in that study. And they were looking to match up leaf textures and stuff, which, you know, if you think about some of the older zoysias with some of the older tall fescues, leaves were fairly similar on those. But we looked specifically at tall fescues in Bermuda grass at UK and had them mowed down to 3/4 of an inch, which is not typical for tall fescues. You know, typically for a lawn, I would say, you know, keep that at 2.5, 3.5 inches, whatever it is. And mowing them at 3/4 should thin them out and kill them. But some of the tall fescues that I looked at, not all of them, but some of them took that height no problem and did just fine with the Bermuda grass. And so for locations farther south, especially if we're talking lawns, a tall fescue may be the way to go. If we're talking golf or sports turf, some of these lateral spread fescues may be the way to go to help with recovery from divoting and whatever else that these things are put up against. But I think we're going to see more tall fescue in southern locations just because it's a tougher grass in general over bluegrass. And the new ones are almost as pretty, almost as good looking with texture and color and all of that stuff. So, you know, I love tall fescues and so, you know, I'd like to see more and more of this happening with Fescamuda or whatever you want to call it.
It doesn't roll off the tongue as easy as Bermuda, though.
It's just not the same. It's not the same. I agree.
Thank you for joining us for Around the Turf Scene. I'm Rusty Stacklewitz, your host. I hope you join us next time. Around the Turf Scene is a production of Xylem Marketing.